And a very pleasant good morning. Welcome into the MRMC Doctor's Office program. Today we're going to talk a little bit about emergency medicine, and Dr. Gail Osgood has joined us. He is the Emergency Room Medical Director at MRMC. How are you this morning, Doctor?
Putting your
hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
All right. Has it been busy in the emergency room for you over the as we head into a new school year?
Yes, absolutely. The summertime is always one of our bigger times. You know, of course, cold and flu season's coming up, too, so we expect a big surge in patients. But with summertime, you get all the injuries, the traumas, and, you know, those kind of things. So it's been busy, and we're glad to have the business.
All right. Well, you hit on a couple of topics there I think we can address. Let's go back to the summertime. We're not over with all the bug bites and that kind of thing, are we?
No, we're not at all. And, you know, we're seeing a fair number of like tick-related illnesses too. And Missouri has, in the past, been really kind of a host for an illness called ehrlichiosis. But we're starting to see a variety of other tick illnesses now that were really fairly rare, if not unheard of, in our state. So it's always you're always kind of vigilant for those kinds of things too.
All right. So what should folks look for? What should they actually be real concerned about?
In terms of like tick-borne illness?
Exactly.
Well, you know, obviously, if you know you've had a tick on your body more than 24 hours, we typically think less than 24 hours is a fairly low-risk situation. But a lot of times people feel bad. They have lots of malaise. They'll have fevers, lots of body aches. There are a few tick illnesses that are associated with rashes. So if you're starting to feel like that, then you can come on in. There are certainly, without doing specific testing for individuals, tick-borne illnesses, there are like some basic laboratory blood type patterns that we look for that might suggest that. And then if there's a specific concern, we always obviously treat first and then wait for test results as we test for specific illnesses to come back.
Doctor, it's kind of interesting you brought that up, and I'm not breaking any HIPAA rules by bringing this up because my brother-in-law lives in New York, and he had the tick-borne illness over the summer, but he doesn't have a spleen, so his immune system is down. So some people are at greater risk, aren't they?
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah, that's. I always warn people about that, about not having a spleen and how it impacts their lives. And I think people have it, you know, they know that, but I think people live with it, and they have a tendency to forget. So it's one of those questions that we try to always ask people when they're coming in with fevers, whether they have some type of an immune problem. I oftentimes ask people if they have a spleen or not, and so try to remember to do that. But yeah, that's a good point. There are people who are either taking medications or have some type of an immune problem or don't have a spleen that does put them at risk for infectious diseases that other people don't have.
Doctor, would it be a good idea for everyone to take some time when they're sitting at home to write down, hey, I've had this surgery on this date, I'm taking this kind of medication, so if something develops where they need to go to the emergency room, they've got all that stuff handy?
That is a wonderful idea. I see it more and more. Like, I think when I first started my career, it was unusual for people to come in with lists. Nowadays, it's much more much more normal to see that, and it's just wonderful because there are things that when you get up above three or four medications, the incidence of cross reactivity, that is one medicine interacting with another one causing some bad problems, certainly raises that that risk is certainly much higher in that patient population. And also too, we like to know in terms of looking at that list whether or not if we're going to add a medication to it. Looking for potential interactions is always a good thing.
Not only that, I'm guessing when people come into the emergency room, both they and their family members or whoever is with them, they're under some stress, and you can forget things, can't you?
Absolutely, yes. And having it, any checklist is always better when you're relying on your memory. It does get, in periods of times of stress and just times of illness, it can be really difficult for people to remember things or to even to focus on that when they're really not feeling well and when family members are stressed. That's an excellent point. You do have a tendency to forget things, sometimes very important things.
All right. Are mosquito bites and bee bites and that kind of thing, are they a concern at all?
Well, there are some illnesses that are transmitted by mosquito bites. The unfortunate part about those things, there's typically like viral type illnesses. And at least here in the state of Missouri, I mean, malaria and those kind of things around the world are not like that. But or here in Missouri and in the United States, most of those mosquito-borne illnesses, there's really not a treatment for other than just supportive therapy, you know, like pain relief, maybe fluids and those kind of things. So there's not really any specific antiviral or antibacterial type medicines that we can use to help those kind of people. So we end up testing for those things when we run out of other things, you know, that are treatable to look for.
Hey, doctor, it was about 2 years ago when I was cutting the grass, I ran over a bunch of yellow jackets in the ground who found that they really like to run after me. And at that point, Benadryl becomes your friend, doesn't it?
Benadryl does. And, you know, and there is that patient population that are truly highly allergic. They can actually get anaphylactic to those stings. And, you know, I warn people when they do have a bad reaction that oftentimes exposures to that same antigen, that same thing that caused this reaction, can actually be worse the next time. So it is important, you know, to be wary of those kinds of things. And most people do just suffer the pain and the local inflammation from whatever sting or bite that they get. But there are people who can actually have systemic effects.
Doc,
we're ready to treat those over MRMC.
Dr. Gail Osgood, the Emergency Room Medical Director at MRMC. He is with us today on the MRMC Doctor's Office program. Certainly, if you have a question for him, we welcome your phone calls at 263-2424. 388-6424, toll-free, 800-892-2300. Doctor, what got you interested in emergency medicine?
Well, my journey's a long one. I was at school for 14 years, and my wife was going back to nursing school, and I was helping her with doing some things, kind of trying to help teach her, and I really said, you know, I thought to myself, man, I really missed the boat. I wish I would have been a doctor. And I had some grandparents who lived down in Van Buren, Missouri, who had just really marginal and very, like, intermittent care. And so when I at first thought I was going to do primary care, I was blessed with the opportunity to be able to go back and finish some coursework that I needed and to take the admissions test and then to come back actually being offered a place at University of Missouri for medical school. But I went there with the idea I was going to become a primary care doctor. But as I got into it, I happened to do a rotation in emergency medicine. And I mean, I was just overwhelmed. I finally found what I thought was my life's calling. And the thing I like about it the most, I think, is like the instant gratification with the opportunity to help people. People come in with a broken bone. They can get pain medications. They can get a splint, which will keep those bones from moving around. You see a stroke. And, you know, they're within the time frame, the window for treatment, and you can see those people recover right in front of your eyes, a heart attack. You can get those people over to a cath lab and, you know, get the medicines on board to help them with the pain. And or someone who's anaphylactic, like we talked about with a bee sting, and you give them that epinephrine, you give them that Solu-Medrol, those other medications that we use, Benadryl, and watch those people, you know, turn right around. I love that instant gratification. The other thing, like you talked about, when people are typically very ill, the stress levels, you see people sometimes in their worst because they're really, really sick. And it's a great opportunity to be able to step in and really help that person and their family or their loved ones during that period of time. So those are the big things that I really, really, really liked, that really caught me about emergency medicine. And I'm probably the luckiest guy you'll ever meet. To have the opportunity to be here in Moberly and to be here at a time when things are really changing at the hospital for the better. And I'm just glad to be here.
All right, we've got a phone call coming in. Moberly line, hi there, you're on the doctor's office. Hello. Evidently, they want another part of the building. Doctor, I got to ask you, because there's all kinds of TV shows out there about emergency medicine. One of my daughter's favorites is The Untold Stories of the ER. Do bizarre things ever happen in the emergency room like we see on TV?
That's probably one of the better shows, one of the, the more realistic shows, I think, in terms of things do happen that, you know, are just difficult to really fathom if you're not involved in that care. And strange things do happen. And that's the other kind of fun, exciting part of this is just the not knowing what's going to come in that door next. I mean, some people don't like that, and other people like me really do. And so that's you know, kind of a fun thing about it.
All right, we got another call coming in. Moberly line, hi there, you're on the doctor's office.
Yeah, I was listening to you earlier. My husband had a tick-borne disease.
That's easy for you to say.
It starts with an E. I can't pronounce it.
Ehrlichiosis.
Yeah, that's it. Uh-huh. Okay, about a little over a month ago, and he came into the Euro's ER. I don't know if you remember him or not, but anyway, his first symptoms was sick to his stomach and just aching all over.
Uh-huh.
He just hurt from head to toe. And then he couldn't walk. So we brought him into Euro's ER. You admitted him to the hospital. And
we're going to have to, I'm going to tell you, we're going to have to be careful here because we don't want to trump on anything with HIPAA.
No, they helped a lot. But then they had to send him to the university, and he saw all these infectious disease persons. And the one thing that has affected, he's a lot better now because he was on a lot of antibiotics. But it affected his nerves and muscles in his bad arm where he had rotator cuff surgery.
Uh-huh.
And now he can't lift his arm. He could before, but he can't lift it without help from his other arm.
Uh-huh.
Is that normal?
Well, I don't think that's necessarily normal. It's certainly one of those things that oftentimes people who have had some underlying illnesses or some underlying injuries might be impacted more, and it's difficult to know what the extent of his full recovery will be. But there are certain tick-borne illnesses that can really linger. Ehrlichiosis is not oftentimes thought to be one of those, but there are tick-borne illnesses that can really linger. People really do have a difficult time getting over that. And the nervous system aspects that you talked about are not unusual, but oftentimes do get better over.
Well, he's in therapy for that arm right now.
Good. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, but anyway, I just thought I'd tell you.
All right.
He did have that. Okay.
Thanks so much for calling. Is it good, or is it, I don't know what the best phrase would be, Doctor. Uh-huh. Do you like to follow up in the patients you get to see in the ER? Because I know following up in everyone would be difficult.
Following up on everyone is difficult, but it's a part of our learning. So we find out things that we did right, we find out things that we did wrong, and so it's all part of learning. And so we want to know when people have good and people have bad outcomes, and we do regular chart reviews on that. We do that for ourselves. We have our own quality program that we do with the hospital where we actually look up things. And there are people we get with admissions, we get constant feedback about, well, this is what we found. And with transfers, particularly to your hospital, we generally get some good feedback from that, too. So always in the process of trying to learn, and we're always in the process of trying to improve care. And feedback like that, follow-up is certainly an important part of that.
All right, we got another call coming in. Moberly line, hi there. You're on the doctor's office.
Yes, hello. I have a question about the coat that you get on your tongue and what causes that and what can you do to help that, and if it's just normal. A white coat, you know, you get on your tongue.
Uh-huh. Some people get that. Some people can also, there's a condition called geographic tongue, which is nothing really, nothing serious. But then also there are things like thrush or fungal infections that can cause that. So without really seeing it, it's hard to know. If it hurts, it's something or stings kind of, or is influenced by acidic or sour foods or salty foods, probably something you want to have somebody take a look at.
Yeah, she hung up, but if you got white spots in the back of your throat, probably a pretty good idea to get looked at.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that's probably a good thing.
All right. Doctor, where is emergency medicine heading in the next decade or so?
Well, I think in terms of training, I think we've recognized the fact that training matters. And so right now the big trend is to take emergency medicine trained physicians and put them out in the communities. And that's one thing that this joint venture between University Hospital and Moberly has really proven, is that training does matter. And we had, when I first got there were five full-time physicians there. Three of those guys were not trained in emergency medicine, but they had a wealth of experience. But we've seen over time that as we've been able to add actual trained physicians there, that our quality has just gotten really much better. And so that's the big thing. The problem is that lots of physicians go to training centers that are in like suburban or urban areas. and there's lots of opportunities for recreation. The pay typically is better there. But it's difficult to recruit trained physicians to more rural areas like Moberly. And one of the things that we've noticed is that, like, when people train in these kind of centers, these tertiary referral centers where you've got every subspecialty at beck and call for consult, and then you end up in a hospital, in a rural hospital, that perhaps there aren't all those different subspecialties there that are just waiting for you to call and come over and help, you know, in the ER, that physicians have this comfort level that, you know, they find that they have a degree of exposure there that they are not used to having. So one of the things we're trying to do to help with that is we're actually going to have, with the university, we're actually going to have a rotation where the residents come up and do community medicine. They'll come up and work, you know, for like a month in our ER, so they kind of get a better feel of what it's like to work in an area like that. So, you know, I think it's going to be important for their training and just for their own peace of mind to know that they can actually do this job without having had, you know, a vascular surgeon at, you know, one phone call to come right down to the ER, or perhaps like someone who specializes in plastic surgery to be right there. Now, we know we have that. You know, we can transfer people when they actually need those kinds of things. But it's good for residents when they train to kind of figure out what it is they can do and what they can't do.
So how important is it for you as someone who grew up in a rural portion of the state to be able to give back like you're doing here?
Oh, we love that. That's exactly what we're looking for. We're looking for people, you know, that are from this area that want to come and work here. And that's really the best combination, is people are happy when they're out in an area that they're familiar with. And, you know, they don't want to be in New York City, or they don't want to be in San Francisco, or they don't want to be in Florida or Hawaii or whatever. They want to be right here. And that's really the perfect match, is when we can find people who are happy to be in a community like Moberly and who are trained to do the job that we want them to do. That's really the best match.
Okay, I'll tell you a real quick story, and then I want to, before we wrap up, I want to talk about flu with you. Our daughter was born in Moberly in 2001. She has achondroplasia and was transferred to the university because of jaundice and some other things. Well, right after she was born, a couple weeks later, started to get sick, took her into the ER. They realized there was a problem. She was just about a day or so later having a VP shunt put in. How rewarding is it for you to realize that you had a hand in something like that and really changing someone's life?
Oh, it gives me goosebumps just talking about it. And I know that sounds silly, but it's like one of the things that really drives me. And that's the thing I really have passion for, which is why this joint venture has been so successful, is because we really have this passion. I really have this passion. My boss really has this passion. Renee Brayton has just been totally on board with the idea that we get people there. And when we have those kinds of experiences, those are the reasons why we do emergency medicine.
Okay. You know, the cool really end of the story, though, doctor, is that when my daughter, about 2-3, she's 17 now, she turned on Untold Stories of the ER about 4 or 5 years ago. The doctor on there was Dr. David Jimenez, who performed her surgery.
Oh, cool.
So that is really cool. All right. How about the flu? We're getting into that time of the year. We got people in the newsroom here sniffling all over the place. What's coming?
Well, you know, I think that we've found out over the last couple of years that a lot of times our flu treatments in terms of the vaccinations have not always been right on board. And I think that really reflects travel patterns now. People are more fluent in their travel. And we're getting, I don't know if you saw the news report the other day where the jet was actually stopped and about half the passengers were actually quarantined to see exactly what they were bringing in, because just in the period of this long flight to the United States, they had a lot of people start to develop, you know, the fever, myalgias, and those kinds of things. So certainly I think that we have to be on the lookout for these things. There are some really good antiviral medications that really help, and there are some really high-risk populations that you for sure want to make sure get treated with antiviral medications for influenza. So it's coming. And again, I think the flu seasons over the past few years have been longer, and they've been at more, I guess, stranger times than normal. Typically, we always thought of these things as indoor illnesses, that flu seasons happen when people are indoors because they're in close contact. But now we have flu coming from all over the world to the United States. And so we have to be more vigilant during periods of time when it's not considered to be traditional flu season.
So is the flu shot, is the flu mist a good idea?
I think it's always a good idea, because if it happens to correlate with, cross-reactivity with the flu strain or happens to be dead on, it's certainly quite protective. But in periods of time where the CDC or whomever misses the actual flu strains, you know, it's still there because you get one strain of flu doesn't mean you don't get another strain. And so I think it's always a good idea to do what a person can to protect themselves from the flu.
All right, so what's a good thing to do when I'm 52, when I was growing up, and Mom still says this, you need lots of vitamin C.
Uh-huh.
Is that a good idea?
Vitamin C is not a bad thing. It's water-soluble, so it's hard to really get too much of that. If you're eating right, you're eating, some good fruits and vegetables, you're probably getting enough vitamin C, but it's water-soluble. It's hard to really get too much of it. So, it's okay to take that, I think.
All right, so what is a good idea? Is there any way to prevent, I don't want to say prevent the flu because that can't happen, but reduce the severity of it?
Well, not necessarily like we talked about before, we want to take the flu vaccine as it comes out and then just really good hand washing, making sure that, like, if you come into a workspace and someone else has been there, like if you notice in our ER, one of the first things the doctors will do is go get the Santa wipes and just really wipe down everything because, again, when you're sharing things like computer keyboards or doorknobs, you really want to make sure that you're, doing good hand hygiene and making sure you're washing yourself after those kinds of exposures with something that's adequate to kill those germs. So just those kinds of protections, good hand washing, staying away from people that you know are sick, encouraging people that are sick to stay out of the workplace. Those kind of things are the things we can do.
Okay, a final thought. When should someone go into the ER then with a flu concern? What are some telltale signs?
Well, typically with flu, we find people who are just not feeling well. They have fevers. They have myalgias. Certainly, if you have someone who has a difficult time with breathing or they feel like they're behind on their fluid intake, they're maybe lightheaded or feeling weak and they might need some fluids, those are things. Or if there's any concern that this could be something besides influenza, then certainly we want to see those kinds of people. Sepsis and influenza can present a lot the same way. And, feeling really sick, feeling really tired, aching all over. So we want to make sure that people don't have something besides influenza, too, oftentimes. So if you're just really feeling bad, we're there for you, and we want to take care of you.
And how about a fever?
A fever is certainly an important thing. But, again, a lot of people who may be immunocompromised, people who are older, may not get a fever, may not be a high fever anyway, like a younger person who has a competent immune system may have a really high fever. Older people or those who are really young or those who are immunocompromised may not have that really high fever.
All right. Hey, doctor, appreciate the time. Look forward to doing this again sometime.
Perfect. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Dr. Gale Osgood, he's joined us today on the MRMC Doctor's Office program.